The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So lovely to see you all. I wanted to start with just a couple of words about my sabbatical and not very much, but just a little bit about how that's affecting me as I step back into teaching. One of the things that happened on sabbatical really was a lot of inspiration for new ways of teaching, new kinds of forms to teach in, and inspiration to do that. And I realized that the way my life had been structured with the amount of retreats I was teaching and the weekly classes I was teaching, it didn't leave much room for something new to emerge. And so next year, my retreat teaching schedule is pretty much what it was before. So that's still set. But I've decided to step back from these two, the Tuesday and Thursday weekly classes, and not step back into them. So Liz and Lian Chi and Ari will continue with this group on Thursday evening, which makes me really happy. And I do want to say too, I'm sure he'll mention it, but Ari, Ari will be back maybe once or twice, and then he's going on a 7-month retreat. You know, so he'll be away for a big chunk of time. So Liz and Lian Chi will do most of the classes, and when they can't, they'll find some other people. And I think there was a kind of general consensus that having fewer substitutes is nicer. So I think that will be the approach. So, the other piece of this was I was realizing if I want to really kind of shape something new, it would be useful for me to have my own website so that I can let people know what I'm doing. And that is accomplished. I've got my own website. It's simple, andreafella.org. And I've got links to it on the IMC and the IRC websites under the teacher links. So it's available. It's pretty easy to find. It's not quite yet very easy to find by typing my name into the Google search engine. That takes a little while, apparently. So I just wanted to let you know that. I do anticipate being an occasional substitute in this class, so you'll see me from time to time here. Now the topic I thought of reflecting on today came about through a couple of different conversations, Dharma conversations this week, one with Lian Chi earlier this week. So I didn't tell you, Lian Chi, I was going to talk about this, but it was a question that we were exploring together, and a question that's come up with students of mine and came up with one of her students of, sometimes when we talk about mindfulness and the way we approach just meeting experience, be with experience, with non-judgmental awareness, it's a wisdom approach. We're talking about exploring meeting our experience with wisdom. And sometimes the way we talk about it, there can be a question or a confusion about where's the kindness, where's the metta in this, where's the how does that come into this practice? And for me, it comes in how we pay attention. So that was really an emphasis in the guided meditation. You might have caught that. I mentioned it a bunch of times too, that we can bring a friendly attention, a kind attention, the kind of attention that a dear friend might bring coming to you, if you haven't seen a dear friend, or the kind of attention you might bring to a dear friend you hadn't seen for a while. How are you? There's a curiosity and an interest, which is more the wisdom side, but there's also a connection and a care. You don't need to interfere with how they are. You just want to hear and meet and be with that. And so that approach, this is the aspect of what we might call wise attention, wise mindfulness, a wise attitude towards our experience. we don't simply pay attention. We pay attention with a perspective that supports balance of mind and ease with whatever's happening in the present moment. And that perspective, we could use the word allowing, accepting, curiosity, it can have many different flavors to it, and it's useful to notice and explore the different flavors that can come with that kind of attention. So for myself, when I really find myself in the place where, it's okay to be here with things as they are, it can be useful to kind of check in, what else is here? How else is the mind in that place? What else is going on when the mind is okay with things as they are? There's a lot of different flavors of qualities of mind that might be there. Some of them related to wisdom and some of them related to love, compassion and care. So that both of these qualities of love and wisdom grow together as we explore this kind of non-judgmental awareness, allowing attention to just meet what's here. We can bring also, so, you know, sometimes we might have more of a capacity to, you know, some of us may have more of a wisdom mind or a mind that has more curiosity and interest and just like, well, what is this anyway? That's definitely my mind. It's got that flavor of curiosity and that can bring a kind of, that curiosity can bring a kind of a non-judgmental attitude to what's here. You just want to know what's here, not judge it or fix it or change it. Just what is this? So some of us may have more that capacity in our tendency in our minds, and others may have more the capacity of compassion and care of like, how is this? You know, can I have friendliness with this? Can there be a sense of care and friendliness with this? And that can also bring along the quality of non-reactivity to have that sense of care. So both approaches, you could kind of explore from the friendly side, or you could explore from the curious side, and see how that supports you. See how that supports your capacity to meet experience, to allow experience to be as it is. I like this word allow because it feels like it brings both love and wisdom together in the same word. You know, allow things to just be as they are. And that quality of allowing, you know, if somebody is sitting with you and allowing you to be just exactly as you are, isn't that experienced as a kind of a care and a love that they don't need you to be any different than you are? So that quality of allowing, to me, feels like it encompasses both sides of this picture. And as you come to the place where you do recognize, oh yeah, there's something going on, and it's okay. Sometimes it just has that quality. It's okay. It's not a problem. That's a phrase I used over and over to myself. I had a 2-month retreat earlier this year. I did 2 months of intensive retreat, and that phrase of this is how it is and it's not a problem would arise in my mind. And that's also a form of wisdom, you know, a way of approaching meeting experience. It's not a problem. And when the mind is in that space of it's not a problem, what's here? You can begin to be curious about, as I was pointing to earlier, what else is in the mind in that moment? What does it feel like to have a mind that experiences no problem? In my own exploration of this, I found that it has many of these flavors of compassion and love and care, along with sometimes delight and joy and curiosity and interest, So there's a lot of different beautiful qualities of mind that can appear. And we might miss them, actually. Calm is another flavor, too. Happiness, we might miss that. For me, that, I mean, it depends on, you know, your tendencies, what you might tend to miss in your mind when it arises. I was definitely the, you know, I had the tendency towards noticing what was wrong. And so I didn't tend to notice when things were going well or when things were delightful or easy. And as I began to explore the practice and look at my own mind, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm settled back here. And what's actually going on? Oh, what's happening is I'm happy. Wow, I didn't even notice that. So to have that curiosity of what else is going on in your mind, you might begin to see many flavors that connect together in this quality of no problem, many flavors that are available to be known, beautiful qualities of mind. And that touching into those qualities of mind, I found also to be a motivator for practice, because it feels good to touch into those qualities. So this is really exploring, in a way, exploring what is the mind like when it feels like it's okay with what is. It's kind of turning to that, what's happening in the mind when things feel okay. And maybe you'll begin to see, too, not only the allowing side, but also the love that's there. This the qualities of love and compassion and joy are cultivated right along with this very simple practice of how is this in this moment, just meeting this moment over and over again with an allowing approach to the mind. So the other question that came up this week that I wanted to just touch into, you know, the emphasis here in this style of mindfulness practice is really, you know, non-interfering with what is. We mentioned that a lot. You know, it's just like, what's here? Can you be with what's here and not interfere with it, but just be curious about it, be friendly with it, so that it can kind of show itself to us. And in that process of allowing, we learn a lot. We begin to learn something about conditioning. We learn something about how it came up in the first place, what it's tending the mind to head towards. We learn something about how we get caught, what we get stuck to. So there's a lot that we learn by simply allowing. And that growth of wisdom, that growth of the learning, of understanding our minds, creates the conditions for the mind to begin to let go of the things that are not so helpful and to cultivate more of the things that are helpful. It's a very natural process of how the practice works. It's kind of amazing that our minds are built this way, I think. It's beautiful that as we turn with attention, with a non-judgmental awareness, naturally the unwholesome qualities of mind, the things that create tension and tightness and stress, tend to get weaker. And the wholesome qualities of mind, the qualities that tend to lead us towards more ease and peace and happiness and love and compassion, those tend to get stronger. So that's the basic, you know, instruction in the mindfulness practice. Just be with what is and allow it to be. The question that came up the other day in another conversation was, are there times when it makes sense to do something and not just to simply allow experience? And I would say, you know, there are times that the way I like to explore this or talk about this is that there are times when we can recognize that trying to be mindful of something, it's like the experience we're trying to be mindful of, you know, trying to meet something. Maybe it's a strong reactivity of some kind. For me, it was anger for a long time in my practice. When I noticed anger coming up, I would try to be mindful of it, and I would notice within a few moments, seconds, I would just be lost in it. And so the recognition was, wow, you know, that's like this pull of anger, the mind that is with the anger, when the anger arises, it's stronger than the capacity to be mindful of it. And so that kind of situation, when the experience or the object or what's happening for you is stronger than your capacity to be mindful, then it's useful to turn your attention to something else. Find something else to explore or meet. So what I did for myself in that situation with anger, often for me, for some reason, at that time of my life, it was in the first year or two of my practice, at that time of my life, I was often taking a walk, when my mind would just be kind of floating around, and it would float around and land on this person that I was mad at and just go off into its anger. And so what I noticed is I could for a moment go, oh yeah, there's that anger. Okay, there's a danger zone there. I'm just going to get pulled off into it. So I'm just going to put my attention on my feet. And so I just would direct my attention to my feet for a few moments. And that would often allow those angry thoughts to dissipate. And then it might come up again and I would put my attention back on my feet. So if the power of the experience is you notice, I mean, you might try, and I did for a while try to be attentive to that anger, to be mindful of it. And I just saw, you know, I just get lost when I try to do that. So this is not helpful. It's not helpful when I just notice that I got lost. So turning the attention to something in that moment. The other time that it might be useful is if you see, you know, to do something, is if you see that a particular pattern or habit of mind is moving you in the direction of doing something unskillful. And you probably want to not follow through on those thoughts and actions, not to simply allow, oh, the mind is so angry, I want to do this bad, you know, this really unskillful thing. I'm going to just follow through with that and allow that. That's not helpful. If you can, and often when it's expressing or playing itself out in an action, there can be a possibility of just saying, oh, I know that's not going to have a good outcome. Let me not go there. And sometimes it can feel like, you know, it's like a saying no, I'm not going to do that. And so there are times when it is skillful to take some kind of action. But by and large, what I like to suggest for people, because often people don't trust the process or don't trust that just being with something is useful. You know, they feel like it's a bad thing to be with a difficult emotion like anger. You know, isn't it making me more angry to be with or notice this anger? Well, if you are actually aware of it, it is not. It's actually creating the conditions for you to learn something about that difficulty. But you have to be clear. There has to be a kind of a sense of knowing or understanding when the mind gets caught by the experience and when the mind can be with the experience. So that distinction, when it's caught by the experience and when it can be with the experience. Now, there's another kind of nuance here, though, that's important to kind of recognize. You can also know, so what I'd say is if you can be aware, wow, this thing is happening and the mind is really caught by it. If you can know that, I'm really angry and boy, am I bought into that. Just really feel like I got to do something. You know, if you are aware of that, that also is possibly a place where learning can happen. The place where learning goes out the window is when mindfulness goes out the window. So you can explore the possibility. I've explored a lot. Wow, this is what's happening, and I really don't like it. you know, this difficult thing is happening and I really don't like it. Okay, well, that's what's happening. And I can know that. There's often a kind of a feeling of, oh, that's what's going on. So I'm really mad at this person and I don't like that I'm mad. You know, I'm mad at myself for being mad. Oh, that's what's going on. You know, there can be a sense of landing with, oh, that's what's happening. And that kind of feeling of landing can help you to stay and be curious about what's there and to bring that friendly attention to what's there. So there's some exploration that we can make, but often I find people do have the question, you know, aren't I just making myself more angry by being mindful of my anger? And I had that question at the very beginning of my practice too, but it answered its own question over the course of a couple of months, because what I saw happening is that anger became less and less of a charge for me. It was much easier. It was no longer just this explosive emotion. It was much more manageable to be with and meet. And so I began to see, oh, actually, this practice is helping me to have some skill with navigating it. So that question of, it can take some trust. It's not obvious to us that mindfulness of a challenging or reactive emotion would create conditions for that challenging or reactive emotion to lessen, to weaken. But over time, we do develop that trust, and then the confidence to allow experience gets even stronger. And to meet the experience in this friendly and interested way together. So those are the thoughts, the reflections I was thinking of offering today. And I just wanted to see if there's any comments or questions about what I offered. And if you're thinking of a question, probably somebody else is too. You know, these questions seem to be human. So you could think of it as offering to the community to have that confidence to reflect on your question or comment.
I have a question.
Okay.
So I've been pondering about this practice that you described of non-judgmental awareness or allowing everything to be exactly as it is. Can this be effective if you don't do mindfulness of breathing and develop some concentration? Can, without doing that, just directly doing this non-judgmental awareness practice, can it be effective that way, or do you need to develop some concentration by following breath for some time?
Well, in my experience, it is possible to do this non-judgmental awareness just without developing concentration first. You can just step into it. For some people, it may be helpful to start with some concentration. But, I would say, I don't know, in my experience of teaching this style of practice, and when I teach this style of practice on retreat, we just start here. We don't start with any breath work or any, you know, we just start with, okay, can you be aware? What are you noticing? Are you aware of this moment? And how are you with that awareness? So, just start right in with that. So we don't, in the retreats that I teach in this style, we don't start with concentration. The concentration develops, a form of concentration develops through the continuity of mindfulness. The moment-to-moment awareness of experience is a form of concentration. It's not awareness of one object moment after moment, but the continuity of the awareness and not getting pulled out into thought, that develops over time. And it creates a kind of concentration. And, you know, you can just explore this curiosity of, well, what's happening? For me, actually, this, when I look back at it, you know, I learned about mindfulness practice a little bit from books. You know, I was in the Peace Corps when I started meditating. But when I look back at what I was doing in my daily life, it was this practice. I kind of set up a couple of projects or ideas for myself, and anger was a big thing. Anger is really the thing that got me into the practice, because I was being torn apart by the anger. And I read a book that said, you might be able to pay attention to your anger instead of being torn apart by it. It's like, well, how does that work? I don't get how that works, but I'm willing to give anything a try. And so I began, I decided to just be aware when I noticed anger in my experience. And that actually ended up being very powerful. You know, the first time that mindfulness kicked in when I explored that was when I was really, really angry. And I was like in a rage, and it was like, oh, wow, I'm noticing that I'm aware of this. And what do I do with this? Oh, my God, this is awful. This feels terrible. That's about all I could do with it in that moment, that first time I noticed, this is what it feels like to be really angry. And so that began a process of exploring being with anger when it arose. So I, in my own experience, in my own practice, actually, this style of practice was really my first practice. And I didn't have a lot of skill with concentration, with staying with the breath. And so, yes, this is absolutely possible in daily life and in retreat practice, in sitting practice. This style of practice is my main form of practice, and sitting practice as well. So what I find actually for me is that this practice of just noticing what's here, watching the flow of changing experience, when I'm in certain retreat conditions, it shifts from a lot of changing experience to the mind kind of landing on the breath or settling with one experience that moves into a concentration sometimes. So this style of practice can also be the ground out of which concentration practice builds. So that, you know, that to have the idea, and I think some of us have learned a particular kind of practice first, you know, the idea that you have to start with focused practice before you open to experience as it is. It's just an idea. And it's not, you know, the believing that idea can make it more difficult to follow through on this, you know, to actually do this. But it's definitely possible, absolutely possible to just start here. Just notice, okay, this is what's happening and this is how I am with it.
Okay, thank you. And actually, are you not worried that the student can zone out and spend a lot of time getting caught up in thoughts? Because I see that happening to me whenever I sit in this kind of non-judgmental awareness.
The trick there, yeah, the trick there is to begin to learn to be curious about the thinking. So again, there's an idea sometimes that we might have that mindfulness or meditation means thoughts go away. And we can also be mindful of our thinking. So there's a skill, and that's a lot of what I talk about early on in the practice. If you notice that you're thinking, you know, notice how that thinking affects you. So you don't have to stop the thinking, but be aware there's a thought, and wow, here's the impact that thought has on this mind and body. How does it feel, you know, when a confused thought arises, or when an angry thought arises, or when the mind just wanders or drifts off? I mean, I find the drifting kinds of thoughts can be a great place to check in. As soon as you notice, wow, the mind is drifting, you know, there's a kind of a quality in the mind that's also very relaxed and open and spacious, and you can touch into that and feel that. So there's a lot of conversation I have with people about how to navigate thoughts. And you have to be aware of that and know that there's a way to work with thoughts.
Thank you. Is there any place where I can learn more about this?
Well, the website that I just mentioned, my own website, okay. I have a whole bunch of teachings on there, and some pointers to retreats that I've done in this style, where you can get recordings with the kind of basic instructions and moving through them in a systematic way. Then there's on my website, I also have a link to Sayadaw Utejaniya's website and links to some of his writings and books. I also have a link to my own, I have a PDF that I wrote, the basic instructions. People transcribed one of my long retreats and created a kind of an instruction booklet in my language out of the form and the way that I teach this style of practice. It's very much connected to the way Sayadaw Utejaniya teaches, but it's my own language through my own experience and culture. So that's there also. There's other teachers that teach in this style. Alexis Santos teaches in this style. Those are a few places to start.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And we're at time, so...